This is a special report from ABC Radio News. Irv Chapman at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which resumed today its full-scale hearings into the U.S. commitment in Vietnam. That involvement, Chairman J. William Fulbright said, as Foreign Aid Chief David Bell came before the committee this morning, that involvement began with economic aid 12 years ago. It has gone on to cost 1,100 American lives. The Foreign Aid Director was subjected to 4 hours of intensive questioning in the morning session and more this afternoon. Chairman Fulbright leading off.
Last year, in April the 26th, Secretary McNamara summarized the cost as of that time. I'll quote one part of one of his statements, and I quote, "It seems likely that the military assistance program for South Vietnam for fiscal 65, our current fiscal year, this was April of last year, will approximate $330 million. And very, very roughly, I would estimate the cost of the United States forces operating the waters of South Vietnam and the air, and the cost of our advisory and logistical support is running in the order of $800 million a year. So that we have a cost approximating $1.5 billion at the present time." That was his estimate of the overall cost as of last April 26. So in trying to put together what the cost is presently running, in view of your requests for supplementals, and using the same estimate as to the cost to the direct Pentagon regular budget, aside from supplementals, it works out, according to my staff, in about this way, that the military from the Pentagon would be $800 million, the same as that year. Supplemental defense appropriation for Vietnam last summer was $1.7 billion, and recently the one currently being considered is $12.3 billion, together making $14 billion. And the economic and military aid, which has already been supplied for this fiscal year, is $1 billion, making $15.8 billion. Is that about correct on an estimate of the cost in dollars for this current year?
Mr. Chairman, I'm confident to testify only on part of these sums. The economic assistance for the current fiscal year, assuming the Congress appropriates the funds we are now requesting, will be about $600 million, including public law 480. The military assistance, which was appropriated last fall for the present fiscal year, is of the order that you were referring to.
That makes about $1 billion, isn't it? Those two together.
That's right.
And you know the supplementals are $14 billion.
The supplementals, though, sir, I personally have not been involved in the military supplemental.
You mean there's no conference or conversations between you and the military as to overall cost of this program? You don't know anything about the military?
The military budget, which is supplemental, which is before the Congress, of $12 billion. I know about...
$12.3 billion, and they had last summer. This is not secret. This has all been the press. There's nothing classified about it.
But the point is, sir, that some of that is for other parts of Southeast Asia. You can, in one sense, say that's all related to Vietnam. I'm sure that's correct. Some of it, however, will obviously be spent not in Vietnam, but in Thailand, in the Philippines, and so on. So all I'm saying is that I do not, I'm not competent to testify on the exact nature of what is in that $12.3 billion or the $1.7 billion.
I didn't want the exact nature. I thought it would give us a starting point. Is what is this operation costing us down there? It's in the neighborhood of $15.8 billion, according to the staff's estimate anyway. And they try to keep up with these matters. And it seems to me this is never brought together. We take it piecemeal, and no one has had a very clear view of about what this involvement means in money. We know, are beginning to realize, what it means in lives and in suffering to people. But this particular bill involves a supplemental request. You know how many Viet Cong were killed last year?
I'm sure we have the figure, sir.
Well, you know about... Isn't it about 11,243, according to the estimates of the Pentagon?
I'm sure your staff work was correct, Senator.
I think it's pretty good. We have some... And to shorten this up, where our
Chairman,
staff, if
no,
you don't...
the figure that is given to me here is 30,000.
Killed or casualties?
Killed. However, it's a matter that, of fact that, or a matter of estimate that can easily be checked.
Well, the staff says that they take this from, I believe, an official statement that there were 11,243,300 killed, which works out at a very high cost per kill, if you want to use
I'm
that.
I'm sure, sir, that's true in any war.
Huh?
I'm sure that's true in any war.
Well, this is the staff figure, the best we could estimate.
What is the answer of the witness?
I'm not the authority on these matters, Senator. The figure that has been supplied to me is 31,360. It differs from the figure that was supplied to the staff. We will get the correct figure for the record.
I would suggest check so that we get an accurate figure. It's now still left in suspension.
I don't
and of course, the Senator recognizes that these are estimated figures. As you know, the Viet Cong do not leave their dead on the battlefield.
Well, we'll look that figure up. He has an official statement there at...
if they can help it.
I think they broke it down as between the Viet Cong and the North estimated North Vietnamese who had infiltrated into there. But in any case, I only ask this to give the impression to both the committee and the public, this is a rather substantial operation as of now, is it not?
It certainly is.
And it's growing?
Yes,
you estimate it's going to be less next year?
No, more.
It's going to be more. Have your estimates as to this rate of escalation in the past proved to have been accurate?
Are you asking me personally, sir, or
yes.
The executive branch?
Executive branch.
There certainly have not been, it's a wartime situation.
No.
There were optimistic expectations a couple of years ago.
Would you say they were a little more optimistic than facts have proved them?
They certainly were, yes, sir.
For several years running, is that not? It's escalated far greater than you had expected.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Recently, General Green, the commanding general of the Marine Corps, on returning from Vietnam, said this: you could kill every Viet Cong and North Vietnamese in South Vietnam and still lose the war. You think there's any evidence of popular support for the Saigon government?
Yes, sir, there is, a great deal.
Could you elaborate that?
Yes, sir.
Briefly?
There was perhaps the most dramatic evidence. Last spring, there were elections in the towns and district communities in Vietnam, in the countryside. These elections, to everyone's, not to everyone's surprise, but certainly to the surprise of many outside observers, were not only held, but some 70% of the eligible voters did in fact vote. They elected the provincial council members. They elected senior citizens of the community, men who had stood, who had offered themselves for election. There were contested elections in nearly every case. It was by the testimony of those who were there and saw it, a vivid demonstration of participation in a normal government function under very abnormal circumstances.
How much of South Vietnam is under the control of the Saigon government, the firm control?
Well, it is necessary. There's no simple answer to that, Mr. Chairman.
Would the chairman identify whether he's talking about area or about people?
I was going to make that distinction, Senator Lausche, in my response. If you consider the inhabited area of the countryside, the estimates which seemed to me when I was there to be most persuasive were that about 25% of the people who live in the countryside live in areas in which there is good security day and night, and in which there are normal government operations functioning. About 50% of the people live in so-called contested areas, in which there is a degree, sometimes a considerable degree, of security. Normally in the daytime, people move around reasonably safely, including the civilian advisors that we have living out in the countryside in the small towns. But at night, the there may well be, and often are, Viet Cong or North Vietnamese military actions. These areas are not secure, not wholly secure at night, and are areas in which there may be units of the Viet Cong or North Vietnamese military forces that can stage attacks. And the remaining 25% of the people who live in the countryside are in areas where the Viet Cong are pretty substantially in control, and where people from the government or American AID advisors, for example, can go normally only with a military escort.
Mr. Bell, would you say it's better now than it was a year ago?
It's about the same, Mr. Chairman.
You recall
there was a period, excuse me, sir, there was a period during the spring and summer where the security conditions clearly deteriorated. But over the last few months, the situation has been somewhat restored, and most people feel that it's about the same now as it was a year ago.
Do you recall that for the last 4 or 5 years, that the testimony each year has been about the same character, that things were getting better and that it was going to be much better in another year? Is that about accurate?
I don't recall, well, put it this way, Senator, my own testimony has not been of that character, and I'm not here speaking for others. It has been evident to us, to the AID people, who have been living and working in the countryside these past several years, that the problem of establishing security and economic progress in areas which are either contested or under Viet Cong control is the heart of the effort to bring about a successful solution in South Vietnam, and that that effort has not made significant progress for the last 3 or 4 years.
Chairman,
you. Yes,
I have here a letter from Secretary McNamara to the committee, which the committee received last week, in which he says, quote, "Saigon remains quite vulnerable." Is Saigon included in the area which Mr. Bell describes as secure?
I was referring, Senator, to the countryside and not to the cities at all. The cities, Saigon, Hue, Da Nang, Nha Trang, the other cities, are, in the terms I was talking about, secure areas. People move about and work in them freely. There are terrorist attacks, as you well know, in these cities from time to time, but they are occasional and not continuous. I think what Secretary McNamara was probably referring to is that major military action against Saigon or against these other cities is certainly conceivable.
Saigon is quite vulnerable.
In the sense that there are units of regimental size, perhaps larger, in Vietnam, which could make land attacks toward Saigon if they so chose, or it's also obviously a vulnerable city from the standpoint of any air attacks.
On the casualties figure, Bell later said the war had cost the lives of 35,000 Viet Cong and North Vietnamese, 11,000 South Vietnamese, and 1,100 Americans. Most of Senator Fulbright's committee colleagues joined in questioning Aide Chief Bell sharply about the goals of the U.S. commitment, the justification for it, and the chances of success. By contrast, Ohio Democrat Frank Lausche sought by his questions to advance the administration's cause.
What do you know about the reign of terror and the number of orphans and the number of people whose lives were taken by the communists in their purpose to communize South?
1,600 last year, village and government employees.
Vietnam.
As I said earlier, Senator, in response to a question from Senator Hickenlooper, the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese have conducted for several years a very brutal, constant reign of terror, or attempt to create terror, a successful attempt in many parts of the country. Last year alone, the figures are that about 1,500 civilian officials including people like school teachers and policemen.
Mayors and
yes,
chiefs?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Were they decapitated, some of them?
That's my understanding,
were
yes,
children
sir.
Kidnapped and killed?
I believe in some cases, yes, sir. There was a recent raid on a refugee camp, which seemed to be just a senseless and brutal assault, killing two or three dozen people for no conceivable reason, except to establish the pervasiveness of the Viet Cong terror in the countryside.
All right, now it's better. The commandant also made the statement, "We own the night now." By that he meant that in the past the night was owned by the communists, but it is now owned by the Allies. You know whether that is a fact.
Senator Lausche was referring to a speech by the Marine Corps Commandant General Green.
Subject, Senator, I'm sure what he is referring to is that the American troops, the Marines and the other American troops, are conducting a major part of their operations at night, deliberately.
All right.
And they have, I've forgotten, but I heard General Green cite the number of ambushes that we establish in typical night in the Marine area in the northern part of South Vietnam.
Proposals have been made that we pull out of South Vietnam.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Proposals have been made that we pull out. And I would like to ask your view on the basis of your communications with high echelon officials, whether that subject has been considered and whether any thought has been given to what area in the world do we retreat? Where do we make our stand? Is it on the shores of California or Hawaii, or are we going to keep it 9 or 10,000 miles away if a stand has to be made?
Well, yeah, I think you've answered the question, Senator. This question obviously has been considered frequently, exhaustively, at great length. It will continue to be considered. In a narrow sense, if we were to withdraw from Vietnam, we would not necessarily retreat to the California coast.
By contrast with Senator Lausche, Oregon Democrat Wayne Morse carried forward his strong dissent from the Vietnam policy. Senator Morse was particularly incensed to learn that Secretary of Defense McNamara told Chairman Fulbright today he would rather not testify in open session next week. He said he and General Earl Wheeler, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, should be heard only in closed session, so as not to give aid and comfort to the enemy from a public cross-examination. Several members of the committee voiced objection to the secretary's desire. Senator Morse's was the most strongly worded.
I file my respectful dissent because I happen to think that it's the Pentagon building, as well as some people in the State Department, who have taken this attitude in the past, as the chairman well knows, that have already led the American people a long way down the road toward government by secrecy in this country. And I am not going to, may I say, no matter how much criticism it brings on my head, I'm not going to support government by secrecy in this country, and the American people are entitled to have that Secretary of Defense on a public record. For the American people are going to die by the millions if we continue, in my judgment, this war of ours in Asia, and result, as I think it will result, in a massive war leading to a nuclear war. I do not think there's any place in this republic anymore to have this Secretary of Defense or any other spokesman of this government hide behind an alleged right to testify in secrecy. And I shall not attend any meeting that sponsors government by secrecy in this country on a matter that is as vital to the welfare of the people of this country. Now, this committee, and I suggest that we have an early meeting on it, if this committee wants to surrender to that request of McNamara to get behind the closed doors of this committee and thereby keep from the American people what they are entitled to know about their own public, about their own foreign policy and military policy, let's have it out. Because the American people, in my judgment, are going to start having it out with this administration the first chance they get a chance to walk into those ballot booths. And that's what they better do. Because they're going to have to vote to protect their freedom.
if we're going to countenance government by secrecy, by denying to the American people the opportunity to hear what these spokesmen for this administration have to say about their policies. And I register that dissent, and the committee can vote secret hearings with the secretary they want to, but the senior senator from Oregon would not be a party to denying to the people of my state open hearings, and I'm not going to be a party to participating in such secret hearings.
Senator Morse explored at length the nature of the undeclared war in Vietnam and the worth of the U.S. aid effort. But while the hearing droned on through the afternoon, President Johnson, the target in absentia of all the tough questioning, called White House correspondents into his office and took the Vietnam spotlight away from Capitol Hill. This was the president's announcement.
For some time, I have looked forward to meeting with the Chief of State of the Republic of South Vietnam, Mr. Tu, and the distinguished Prime Minister, Mr. Ki, in order that we could discuss various matters that concern both of our countries. They have accepted my invitation to meet with them this weekend in Honolulu. I will leave at noon Saturday for Hawaii, accompanied by the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, and the Secretary of Agriculture, and other members of their staff. We will be joined Sunday in Honolulu by the Chief of State, the Prime Minister, and Ambassador DeLodge. The discussions will concentrate on economic, social, and political matters of interest to all of our people. I also plan to meet with General William Westmoreland, the commander of the U.S. military assistance in Vietnam. For some time, I've wanted to discuss the situation in Vietnam with him. He is in Honolulu this weekend for talks with Admiral Sharp, the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific. This will provide us an opportunity to review not only the military situation with General Westmoreland and Admiral Sharp, but non-military matters with the Prime Minister and the Chief of State and with the various members of our cabinet who are interested in pacification matters. We will attempt to send certain technical employees of the government interested in the health and education and agricultural programs on to Saigon, accompanied by some White House staff members following the Honolulu meeting. We expect to return to Washington late Tuesday evening.
In response to reporters' questions, the president cited public opinion polls to demonstrate that public support remains overwhelmingly with him in his Vietnam War policies, including the bombing pause and the bombing resumption. Well, that is not quite the case within the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which feels the time has come for the administration to justify itself publicly, and if not, to limit the president's freedom of action to enlarge the war without end. The hearings will continue next week and beyond. Retired Generals Maxwell Taylor and James Gavin have agreed to appear. These hearings are the closest thing the nation has had to a full-scale congressional debate on Vietnam, and the gloves are off. This is Irv Chapman, ABC Washington. These highlights, a special report from ABC Radio News.
For good listening, keep listening to the ABC Radio Network.